And so with that, I'm honored to introduce our first speaker on patient engagement, Dr. Napolitano.
Good morning, everyone. So my task this morning is really to set the stage for how we engage patients in this discussion. I don't have any disclosures. So the most common question our surgical patients will ask us is, how much pain am I going to have with that procedure you're going to do, and how will you manage it? And so having a blunt conversation to set realistic goals is very important at the outset. We know from research that patient expectations are directly linked to outcome, and that setting reasonable expectations is really crucial to optimizing that outcome. All of our University of Michigan pain material is really focused on this initial discussion. And this is just a screenshot of one of our documents from our pain management group. One of the discussions that we have at the outset is that the primary goal of postoperative pain management is really not to get to a pain score goal of zero. And that's, again, I think confounded. Many patients feel that really is the goal. But really it's to help patients achieve functional outcomes perioperatively, ambulation, pulmonary toilet, ADLs. And our pain group, our acute pain service, has really done a great job. These are, again, a screenshot of some of our University of Michigan materials, where we actually provide these to our patients preoperatively in the preoperative clinic evaluation. And we have something to go to that helps the provider and educate the provider of how to do this right. We have three cornerstones of setting patients' expectations preoperatively. First, we review that it's likely not possible, and nor is it safe, to reduce a patient's post-op pain to something below their baseline. Second, we need to limit perioperative opioids. That is in the patient's best interest, and we review why that is, and we review the adjuncts and non-opioid pharmacologics that we use. And then third, we discuss very openly and honestly right at the first session the non-opioid adjuncts that we will use, the types of other analgesia that we will provide. We discuss epidurals very early in the course. We discuss ketamine very openly with the patients. So I'm going to show you two cases that are very different and show you how in one we can get to completely no opioids and in the other how it's much more problematic. So here's your standard lap coli patient, a 45-year-old female who comes to the ED. She has confirmed acute cholecystitis. You see her past medical history is just hypertension, hyperlipidemia. She had a couple of operations previously, a lap appy and a vaginal hysterectomy, and she's on metoprolol and a statin. And you're going to plan to do a lap coli. So our preoperative assessment goes into these three areas of their anesthetic experience previously, their prior pain experience, and how they respond to usual medications. So let's look at this patient. So she's had two general anesthetics. She said they were both fine. She had Percocet post-op for pain control, and it worked fine, but she got horribly obstipated. And then for her medication response, she tells you Tylenol never works for her. We then do this six-step preoperative assessment, and this gets a little bit more into, does she have any medical or psychiatric comorbidities, pain medications, and other medications. But the two things that are vitally important here are the history of chronic pain and substance abuse, her prior treatment regimens, and the success of her previous post-op pain treatment regimens. And again, this patient is very simplistic. She is opioid naive. Now, on top of that, after we do that patient assessment, we assess the operation we're going to perform. And here, the surgical procedure that we're going to perform is going to cause mild intensity pain. So she's on the far left there. And here, non-opioid drugs will really work. Two guidelines that tell us, again, how to practice in this area. One guideline here recommending multimodal analgesia with, again, both pharmacologic and non-pharmacologic therapies by the American Society of Regional Anesthesia and Pain Medicine. And then here the ASA guideline that basically says always use multimodal therapy, and unless contraindicated, patients should receive an around-the-clock regimen of NSAIDs, COX-2 inhibitors, or acetaminophen, and if the patient's NPO, we're fortunate to have IV acetaminophen. So here is this patient. What we did perioperatively in the operating room, we put local anesthesia, bupivacaine, into her laparoscopic port sites. Our graded approach is always acetaminophen and NSAIDs round the clock. We always use magnesium oxide, 400 BID, which I'll get into in a minute. And then tramadol PRN, which most of our patients don't need. And then we escalate up that ladder of pain to higher opioids if they don't respond, or if you have a complication like a bleed at a port site. So let me touch on MAG. This is really work that's really been recognized by Paul Hilliard, the head of our acute pain service. Magnesium has been shown to actually reduce pain and reduce muscle activity. In this meta-analysis, which is the most recent one, magnesium reduced cumulative IV morphine consumption by 24%. It also reduced numeric pain scores both at rest and movement, and it had no side effects. So we choose in all patients to use this dose of magnesium that has been studied at 400 milligrams POBID, and if they need it IV, they get switched to IV dosing. Now, that's in LAP-COLI and LAP-API. Non-opioid treatment is really preferred. But here, actually, been publicized just this week and presented here at the college, a wonderful study from the Cleveland Clinic Group, Akron. 83% of patients who underwent elective colectomy required no narcotics post-op if they were opioid naive. With this regimen of early patient education, preemptive analgesia, ketamine-based non-opioid general anesthesia, modified liposomal bupivacaine nerve blocks, and then again post-op no narcotics. Now let me contrast that case, much more difficult case. This is an opioid tolerant patient. This is a 52-year-old female, one of my patients with partial small bowel obstruction, sort of been chronic. She's had a recurrent incisional hernia that's very large. I'll show you her CT. She also has a transverse colostomy right in the center of her recurrent hernia after she had an anastomotic leak after a low anterior resection for colon cancer. You can see her past medical history is a little complex. She's morbidly obese, a type 2 diabetic, hypertensive, hyperlipidemia, but most importantly, chronic pain. She's had three prior laparotomies, so that's a problem. And you see her current meds there include clonazepam, so she's on chronic benzos. And her pain medications right now are MS-Contin and Norco for breakthrough. So here is her CT, a huge hernia, and she has loss of domain. She's actually one of my favorite patients, but she has loss of domain. Here's her colostomy sitting at the bottom of this massive hernia with complete loss of domain. She's a wonderful patient, but she's a smoker. She chronically abuses narcotics and very challenging. So we're going to dive into this case, so let's do our preoperative assessment. I think I had three clinic visits with her preoperatively. So first, her anesthetic experience. That's, again, an important question. Three general anesthetics, very bad experiences with each of them. She tells me I was awake at the end of each operation with a tube shoved down my throat. Pretty true, but basically awoke prematurely. Her pain experience has been horrible, inadequate pain control. Nothing seems to work to control my pain. And her medication response, no one ever gives me enough pain medication. I always feel like my abdomen's going to explode. So then here's our six-point preoperative assessment that we do. And again, the ones that are most important, medical and psych comorbidities. She has this history of chronic pain. She has a distant history of substance abuse. She previously had a PCA with a basal rate, which did not work well for her. She said it did not control her pain. And then she had significant nausea with her PCA. So this is a very challenging patient. Now, we're going to involve our acute pain service, but one of the most important things we're going to do, because she's on chronic narcotics, is try to decrease that preoperatively. Now, again, after our preoperative assessment with that six-component assessment, we have to recognize that the operation we're going to perform for her now is on the far right. This is going to be a full laparotomy extended beyond her prior laparotomies, severe intense pain, general anesthesia. And in all of these, we promote epidural analgesia preoperatively. And so she thankfully got a very good epidural. So what did we do for her operatively? Again, an epidural and abdominal binder are going to be our multimodal pain management therapies. All of our laparotomy patients, we use an abdominal binder as an adjunct for pain control. But as I said previously, the most important step here was preoperative gabapentin. And we started her on gabapentin. We slowly increased her dose preoperatively. That was titrated actually to reduce her preoperative opioids, and that took quite a while. It took a couple of months to really get her in better shape. We still kept the IV acetaminophen because she was strict NPO. We kept our mag oxide. We actually kept it PO in her. And she was managed both intraoperatively and postoperatively with a ketamine infusion in addition to her epidural. Now, postoperatively, she's still going to be on narcotics. And so we have this concept at the University of Michigan that I think is very important of opioid de-escalation. And so just like you have that step ladder, the WHO step ladder of increasing pain medications as you need to, we decrease pain medication so that we can get to the point of the lowest dose at the time of discharge. And this is something I think we as surgeons have not paid attention to. We just kept the opioids on. It was 5 to 10 milligrams of oxycodone every 4 hours, and we never changed it. But we now intentionally, every day or every couple of days, reduce the dose or we reduce the interval. Our recommendation by our pain group is to reduce the dose, decrease by 20 to 50% every 2 to 3 days. Some patients will manifest some opioid withdrawal symptoms. We tend to use clonidine for those. And again, we have a very great relationship with our acute pain service to help us out with these challenging cases. But the transition is really to attempt to transition from opioids postoperatively to actually be discharged home on no opioids or a decreased dose. This is vitally important to be able to achieve the final recommendations that have come forward from many national groups and from our own Michigan Open Network. This is the opioid prescribing recommendations for opioid-naive patients. How many pills should they be prescribed on discharge? But you cannot get to this unless you start to reduce opioid use postoperatively in hospital. And so that de-escalation of opioid use in hospital is really vitally important. There are additional educational materials from our open group, but as you see at the top there is really setting expectations so that the patient understands what our combined and collaborative goals are for pain control in the perioperative period. Lastly, I put on my slides as well this ACS patient education brochure. It is fabulous. I'm going to point out a couple of points because the tabletop signs are great to have in your office, but I think the most important thing of the brochure is this comprehensive and personalized approach. And again, they're available for you right in the back if you didn't get one. So a couple of the important pieces here that I'm highlighting, what should I take to feel better? Not everybody needs, again, opioids, even if you send them home with an opiate prescription. So it has this great pain management guide. You know, I hardly notice my pain. It's very minimal. Okay, don't take opioids. But again, patients have to be taught about this. But down at the bottom, my pain is as bad as it can be and nothing else matters. So again, this personalized, varied approach, a graded approach to pain control. And then it has great education on the next page where it reviews that there are some non-medication therapies, ice, moisture, heat, complementary therapies, meditation, TENS, in addition to then our pharmacologic therapies, which it lists below, and then it lists some of the side effects, which again are important for education. So to end up with here, patient education, I think, is a responsibility regarding perioperative pain management, but it's also a great opportunity to improve the patient's perioperative experience. I think one of the most important things, as I highlighted in those two very different cases, is we have to strive to learn what the patient expects and, most importantly, what their prior experiences were and any of their beliefs and sensitivities. That is vitally important. So it is that preoperative assessment that now is so important with the surgeon. Investing time and effort into expectation setting with your patient population really can lead to a successful perioperative pain management episode. Thanks again, Jonah, for the ability to participate in the panel.
Great. Thank you. And thank you for staying on time. And so we do have a minute or two if anyone has any questions specific to patient engagement and expectation setting. Okay. I just have one then as I transfer the slides, and that is how long for your routine patients? Most patients are opioid naive. How long does this process take you typically in clinic?
I would say in clinic for the opioid naive patients, probably about 20 minutes. So it's pretty quick, but it's in part because we have educational material that we can send them home with. We have our own Michigan Acute Pain Service medication material.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you mind just using the mic? Thank you. So everyone's aware. Kathleen, I believe, was there. Kathleen, we are planning on recording this and making this available. Is that correct? Okay. So this will be available. The slides will be available. The overlaying audio will be available as well. So, yeah.
Johannes Schneider. I'm a rural surgeon in Western Canada. Just a question in regards to the non-steroidals. It seems to be more and more evidence coming out that for colon surgeries, there may be a risk for increased leak. So we are starting now not to put non-steroidals in our post-operative pain control, which makes me a bit concerned because between opioids and non-steroidals, there seems to be a little bit of a conflict there.
So I can say the data is not quite clear. It was very encouraging to see this paper here at this meeting. I actually went to that presentation, and there was no increased leak rate in their group, and they compared it. It's the Cleveland Clinic. They compared it to their prior history. I do think we need more data there. And I think we're cautious as well. There is some concern as well if you've got an anastomosis that is tend to be inflamed. There might be a little higher risk of bleed as well with NSAIDs. I think we need more data, though. We need the many thousands of patients like Jonah got.
Yeah, I mean, I think data is really key, and this is a topic that was discussed a bunch here, and I've heard sort of arguments on both sides. I know that during our course, the colorectal surgeon who ran the EROS part of the course on Sunday had mentioned that, you know, his view of the data was that it was still very unclear whether NSAIDs truly did cause an increased leak rate, but it was obviously very clear that increasing the opioids had a much higher complication rate with increased length of stay and ileus and all of these other problems. And so if you just looked at it as a percentage of what's causing problems in our patients across anastomosis or none, he thought it was very clear to him that we still should be using the NSAIDs. But everybody, I think, at this point is still kind of coming up with their own answer.